Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
With your hosts, Wayne New, Greg Donald, and Louis
Fass. Welcome to Red Salad Review. Hello. We are doing part three of Kiss from Worst to Best.
That's right.
Greg, what are we doing today?
Today, Greg? We are doing numbers 14, 13, and 12, which are Carnival of Souls, Animal Eyes, and this is going to piss someone off, but Destroyer.
No, I'm already pissed.
That is like one of the top Kiss albums, so yeah, I could see why some people would get pissed, but
you know, talk about that, I get it. I totally get it. It was one of the ones I had the hardest time placing. I mean, they went from being a spectacle to being superheroes on that record, but it has its flaws, and we will get to that.
I think it's the album cover that really people love the most about that album.
I don't agree with that.
It's a really iconic, awesome album cover.
I agree it's iconic, but look at the song list on that.
We'll get to it. Yeah, that's stupid.
Yeah, we'll get to it. All right.
All right, so we're starting with Carnival of Souls.
Yes.
All right, go ahead.
Very good, but well, I don't know if I can really say misunderstood, because Paul definitely wasn't into it at all, and Bruce even says that in interviews.
Really? I'm shocked, because Paul really seems like he's...
He shines on that album.
He does. He really, really does.
Yeah, but I don't think he's ever had anything good to say about it.
No. You know why he doesn't have anything good to say about it? Because if it sold 10 million albums, he would have been praising it to the stars. But because it didn't do that well, it's shit. Continue, Greg.
Point.
Yeah, I mean, he totally does sound forced at points on here, though. There's a few songs where you can tell he probably wasn't the most into it. It's still better him being restrained than the fucking falsetto of the late 80s, though, I have to say.
So yeah.
That I don't mind so much. And I mean, Jungle, you know, that's one of his tunes, and it's the best song on here, I would say. The biggest part of that, though, is, you know, Bruce Kulick and Eric Singer had a lot of fun writing this record, and most of it came out of their jams. I mean, Bruce has 9 co-writing credits on this. You know, he was really one of the main architects of this record. And him and Eric Singer just have this funky groove going that kicks ass. Yes, they go grunge, I suppose you could say. But realistically, if you look at Revenge, I think they were only going to get darker as they were moving along with their music. And Bruce says the same thing. But, well, you have Alice in Chains and Soundgarden that really made an impression both on Bruce and Gene. Gene actually really got into this. I think he's got 6 co-writing credits on this, and actually got into it with Eric and Bruce, though his songs aren't always the best, actually. One of his tunes is the one I hate the most on here, And I have to look it up because I can't remember off the top of my head, but I have it in my notes.
I'm interested to think what your least favorite song is on this. But, we may disagree on it.
Seduction of the Innocent. It's just, it's clunky. The music to it isn't super bad, but it sounds like the lyrics were for something totally separate and Gene threw them on. And it doesn't work overall for me. But next to Jungle, honestly, the best track on it is I Walk Alone. Just a total testament to how good of a player and songwriter Bruce Kulick is. And he sings.
I'll agree with that. Too.
I'm trying to remember the name of the ballad on here. Is it
I Will Be There?
Yeah, great song, man.
I agree.
That's what something like Reason to Live should have been.
Well, I definitely think it's their best ballad since I Still Love You. Like their best written and sounding ballad.
Oh, big time. It's a great tune. Honestly, I mean, well, with any kind of later era Kiss album, you get songs that drag and kind of end up sounding samey. But I mean, at least half of the and Seduction of the Innocent, there's nothing really on here that makes me want to click it off. You know what I mean?
I just had to look up what that song was, because I can't remember the song titles, and I just looked it up, and that is one of my favorite songs off of this album.
Really?
it really is. I think it's very, like very it catchy. It's very catchy, especially when it gets to that chorus. I mean, it's just, it really is such a really good song, and the way Gene sings it, too, it's I don't know, about just, yeah, Seduction? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's a really
you guys don't find the vocal line clunky at all.
No, not at all. Uh-uh.
I think it's one of the okay songs on the album, to be honest.
Huh. Interesting. Musically, it's all right. I mean, that's one of the ones that does delve a little too deep into Alice in Chains territory. But I think a lot of that, too, has to do with the production and the fact that Toby Wright engineered a lot of Alice in Chains stuff.
Yeah, Toby Wright did a lot of those albums, at least the first two, I think. You know. Of Alice in Chains.
He definitely did the first two. I want to say he did the self-title as well, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't
think of one of the EPs.
Yeah, I don't have that stuff in front of me, like so I can't look it up. But
I remember when this thing came out, and they didn't even like do any kind of like press or anything for it, right?
No, not really.
The only reason they ended up releasing this is because of how heavily bootleg it ended up. The whole recording process behind it was a little weird, at least for Bruce and Eric, because they were in the middle of planning the reunion tour, but they were going to keep Bruce and Eric on for, I believe it was a year and a half, just in case something went wrong and they had to cancel it and regroup. And even though the majority of this record was done before the Unplugged performance, there was no plan to release it originally. They were just going to shelve it, move into the reunion. But it ended up so heavily bootlegged, and the bootleg sounded so bad, they decided to finish it and release it.
Yeah. Because I remember going, I was in the mall, and I actually remember seeing it sitting there. I'm like, what the hell is this? Is it a new Kiss album? And it's got a weird cover. It looks like it's just thrown together, you know, just to put something out there. And I was shocked that it was that. But then I ended up hearing The Jungle on the radio too at some point.
Yeah, I heard Jungle on 89.5 WSOU FM and thought it was a really good song. But of all the places I found this album, where would you think I had actually found it when it was released under the radar? The Astoria Public Library.
Wow. Okay. I found it at Kmart, but
public I found it at Walmart but... is where I bought it. I remember that.
Wow. Yeah. I remember those days when they actually sold stuff. But yeah, I picked it up, and I did not expect it to be so grungy. It sounds just like Kiss doing Alice in Chains, basically. And I'm a huge Alice in Chains fan, so I'm okay with it. And I really like the album. I think it's one of my favorite ones, honestly, because it's very dark. It's not very Kiss at all. It's not, you know, you can obviously Paul Stanley, you can hear his singing, and he does fit very well with the style of music. I think I don't know why he wouldn't like it. I could just, like Manny said, I guess because it didn't sell well. But I really like almost I like because I was talking to you guys earlier because I was seeing which songs I like off of each album, and I like 9 songs off of this album. There's 12 on there, right? I think, right?
Yeah,
so yeah. I pretty much like this whole thing, and I like how just Kiss just put out this kind of album. It just doesn't sound like their normal stuff, and it there's just like one good song after the other on here. You know, especially that Seduction of Innocent. I like how Dean sings it. I like the lyrics. I like the topic. You know, it's just cool. Jungle is really cool.
I think Hate
is really good.
Yeah, I think Hate is Gene's best performance on
here. Yeah, I think so too. And then Bruce Kulick sings the song, right? The last one, I Walk Alone.
Yep. Yeah, I Walk Alone.
He sings really good, you know? And I never heard him sing before that.
Dude, there's so much passion in that song too, and the groove him and Eric are in is just badass.
Yeah, I really wish they would have continued with another album, maybe to because of the production was kind of low on this one. Maybe the next one would have been a lot better.
To be honest, I'm happy they pursued the darker route, and I like this album a lot. But I would have preferred their next one. Was still kind of heavier in this style, but was more like Revenge, and that was a little bit more Kiss-like.
Yeah.
I have to agree with you.
I
we'll let you in at some point, Manny. Sorry,
Manny. I just want to say this before I forget. Although I would say, even though this is one of the ones that is definitely the least Kiss-like, I think there's more of that organicness in the songwriting and even how they're playing it that is Kiss-like, unlike shit like Asylum, for example.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Because this is pure, they're just writing music, having fun and just working on songs. Whereas the other albums are kind of forced to do what they're doing. This one, nobody gave a shit about Kiss at this point, and they're doing what they want to do.
I think that Greg is right. I think that if this lineup had continued, because the original thing was they're going to do the reunion tour, and then we'll get the original this lineup back together. And looking back, that's probably unrealistic because then you go from playing huge stadiums to playing mid-size arenas or whatever, and that probably wouldn't have flown. But I think if they had continued, I think it would have stayed on this path. I mean, they saw the writing on the wall. I mean, even though Paul fit very well with the glam/hair metal era, Gene Simmons certainly was not very comfortable during that era. It turns out he can write songs that fit into that style, but his persona didn't fit in. And Revenge, and the thing about Revenge is it got kids, when I say kids, at the time kids, that weren't into Kiss were buying Kiss albums, and Revenge did that. Now, that doesn't translate to going to see him in big shows, but it did sell very well, and it got, for the first time, critical acclaim. But then all our guys are getting critical acclaim by the early 90s, finally, But so I don't know how much that counts, but I do agree with Greg. As far as Paul Stanley's reaction, I look at it the way of the Elder, too. If the Elder had sold, 5 million copies or whatever, 2 million, Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons would be telling you how wonderful it is and how smart they are. But because it failed, now their narrative is, it was a mistake, blah, 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 And from their point of view, maybe it was, looking back on it. But I think that this album is a great Kiss album. Yeah, it sounds like Kiss Garden, but it still has enough of their identity that it, it sounds like Kiss. And I think it's a great album, and I think they met to the challenge, and I think they were smart to hire Toby Wright as a producer because he could get them disciplined to get that sound. And of course, it figures to one time give Bruce Kulick free creative reign. Of course, and this is when the original lineup gets back together.
Right.
Yeah.
Poor Bruce.
He gets screwed a couple of times throughout the years because Nevison didn't like a lot of his ideas on Crazy Nights, like Sword and Stone. And then you get to this record and it ends up getting buried for the reunion. Poor guy can't win.
Yeah, but Paul Stanley wasn't happy with Ron Nevison, I don't know if Gene Simmons.
He was.
Yeah, but not anymore. I mean, have you recent years? He just didn't
Oh,
like.
no. In recent years, I'm talking back then, he wanted to work with him, and he, how great Ron was and the production was. Now, only in hindsight, does he see that he's wrong.
Yeah, but you hire Ron Nevison to get that sound. I mean, that's why Hart hired him, and I don't remember who else worked with him, but I mean, the
Ozzy.
guy's got. Oh, that's right. Ozzy did?
Ultimate
Yep,
Sin.
Ultimate Sin, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. And there you go. That's a perfect example of that sound. The difference is that Ozzy didn't hire any high outside songwriters. It was him, Jakey Lee, and Bob Daisley, I believe, right?
Yeah, although Phil Susan gets a credit on Shot in the Dark.
On, I know, because he's been riding the coattails of that for like 50 years now. But
Well, if you've ever heard the original, oh, never mind. We talked about this when we did Ozzy.
yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, they were very smart, and on this album, they didn't Kiss didn't have any outside writers, where on Crazy Nights they did. That doesn't make it a bad
That's actually
album.
not true.
No, Simmons is writing partner Van Zandt's on a couple
Oh yeah, and
CDs. I
Tommy
think
Thayer
Tommy
writes on
Tommy
it.
Thayer,
Pops up, yeah.
Kurt Cuomo, and Jamie St. James.
Yeah, but
Two
those aren't
four.
the songwriting doctors that we were used to. There's no Desmond Child or Diane Warren
No,
or
but
Imbalance.
they're not KISS members.
No,
Well, Thayer
but
wasn't at the time.
I consider these guys, these are real collaborative. This is not, let's call what is that one lady's name? Holly Knight. You know, let's call her up because we need this, you know, for Crazy Nights or whatever. You know, they were trying to go for radio. This, I think they were going for radio, but they were trying to do it in their own way. And I think the songwriters that they co-wrote with, that was more organic, if that makes sense.
Yeah, this time around they were trying to go against the Nirvanas, Green Days, Alice in Chains's, and Soundgarden's of the time.
Yeah. I
All right, Lou,
agree.
what do you feel?
Yeah, Lou.
Wayne, did you say what you had to say?
Yep.
All right, so hold on, let me get my notes out. Carnalusa. So this is actually number 12 on my list of 20 Kiss albums. Kiss doing it, Kiss doing Alice in Chains, or Kiss expanding themselves as songwriters. Every time they experiment, it gets tarnished by casual fans and mainstream press. Why? I like it when a band experiments. It keeps the ideas fresh. It's not like they released 35 minutes of noise like Lou Reed. There's some good stuff on here. In fact, I love this album and regret having to put it so low on my list, but that's only because I love the other albums that much more. The band sounds tight here. Gene's putting forth a lot of effort. Bruce is finally taking center stage with I Walk Alone, although I will admit the one part of the song that I despise is the reverse drums during the guitar solo. I just find that so annoying. And Paul writes a ballad for his son that, in my opinion, is the best ballad they've written since I Still Love You. Not taking away anything from Every Time I Look at You, but I think this is a far superior song in my opinion. The production is a little off. Maybe it's just the fact that the mastering is what it is. I mean, apparently it does say that it was mastered on the album, on the album sleeve, but I've heard bad mastering. But I could look past it. I would have loved to have heard more material from this lineup. To me, standout tracks are Hate, Childhood Zen, I Will Be There, Jungle, which I agree with you, Greg, is the best song on the album. In My Head, I Confess, and I Walk Alone. Okay tracks, I would say Rain in the Mirror, Seduction of the Innocent, and It Never Goes Away. My least favorite track on the album, and y'all might hate me for saying this, but it's just my opinion, so take it for what it is, Master and Slave. Not a fan.
No, I love that song.
Yeah, I really like that one.
I do too.
I couldn't get into it, guys. I tried. I'm
I'll try
sorry.
again.
Nope, not
Right
only
in the
because
middle
you
with you.
asked.
I Confess is one of the best ones, though.
It
That's a great
is. It really
song.
is.
I forgot to
Well,
mention that, but that is a really, really good
I
one.
love Childhood Zen. I like the it's not an original story, you know, where Gene read about a friend that, you know, I love that song. Yeah. And his vocal on it's fantastic. Anyway, go ahead.
It's really nice to hear Gene not sing about, as we'll get
Pristine 16.
Yeah, I mean, it shows that he's got, you know, real talent when he puts his best efforts forward.
Well, the thing about those two guys,
because, you know, we're going to get to his commercial for Duraflame Logs pretty shortly here.
But the thing about Paul and Gene is they're both very bright guys. They're not your typical.
They're smart businessmen.
Yeah, but they're just smart guys in general. I mean, they have a lot of interest outside of Kiss and music. But especially Gene in the 80s played up to that, you know, I've slept with 1,000 women and all this other bullshit that in this day and age doesn't look too good, but you know, that was another era.
Well, he had to do something. I mean, he was probably the one when the makeup came off that was hurt the most by losing the character.
He was.
Yeah, he was.
He was the first to admit that.
Yeah.
But, now, unlike like Asylum, Crazy Nights, and even as much as I love them, Dynasty and Unmasked, you know, Carnival of Souls has the benefit of it not being a change for the money or the business. It's them honestly trying to find their place in the new music scene. And I think that's another thing that helps it a lot.
Yeah.
They weren't running around saying, hey, go grab me Chris Cornell or Kim Thayil to help write this song. You know, there's none of that gimmicky shit.
Well, I definitely think that their reunion around this time helped bring in the onslaught of 70s and 80s bands that experienced a surge in popularity, you know, with the Scorpions, with Motley Crue, with Def Leppard. You know, you have to give all the credit, even Iron Maiden, because, you know, 3 years after the Kiss reunion, Bruce got back together with the band, and they haven't stopped since then. So,
well, it's kind of during that time, you're right, and Halford had released his first album under his own name.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Sabbath reunited for a tour. So yeah, it was kind of funny because we remember the grunge era is lasting so long, but if you think about it, it's maybe 2 years. I'm not talking about albums that were released after that, but Nevermind, Bad Motor Finger, 10, and what was the other big one? Well, Facelift or Dirt. That's 90 to 92.
91.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, after that, 94, Kurt Cobain dies. But also it brought back a lot of, I remember there's suddenly VH1 was doing documentaries on heavy metal, heavy, the story, the top 100 hard rock metal bands of all time. That would have been unthinkable just a year earlier than that. I mean, this is thinking back on it at the time. I didn't think twice about it, but
well, that was like late 90s, early 2000s, the 100 greatest artists of hard rock and
yeah,
whatever. The show that you're talking about, Heavy, the Story of Metal, that was after the success of Metal, A Headbanger's Journey, which came out in 2005. MTV was doing these retrospectives during the mid 90s of, you know, what they call the hair bands and whatever. Yeah. And, you know, you got to see what Dokken was doing or what Quiet Riot was doing. And I was just like, you know, these guys were your bread and butter for the longest time. And then you pissed on them once, you know, something new came on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, I'd be silly to think that musical tastes are forever, you know, the true fans stick around forever, but you know, every generation is different. You know, and, you know, when my brothers were growing up, you know, they had, you know, the classic Metallica albums and the classic Maiden albums. And even though metal wasn't as popular in the 90s as it was in the 80s, I'm grateful that I had bands like Typo Negative and Fear Factory to keep my love for the genre still going.
I'm going to be completely honest with you there, too, though. In a way, I'm kind of glad it wasn't on top of the world super popular then, because it enabled me to discover a lot of it on my own without mm-hmm. any bias.
Yeah.
And also, you could get them for like a buck a CD or 50 cents a cassette because nobody wanted the shit at the time.
Yeah.
You couldn't give away a Venom album.
I mean, do you think, honestly, a band like Kingdom Come would have had any success if it wasn't for MTV playing them? There would have been no organic no, traffic to them.
Because it would have never stood out on radio, you know. Yes, technically there's hooks to it, but there's nothing super memorable about it.
Well, no. What's memorable is the Led Zeppelin comparison. I actually like that Kingdom Come album, but I like it for the very reason everybody hates it, because it sounds like lightweight Led Zeppelin. Not I'll totally, because Led Zeppelin had a lot of depth to it. Kingdom Come is one note. And that's not a put down to Kingdom Come. It's just a fact. I like it, but it, you know, Led Zeppelin had acoustic songs, you know, hard rocks. Anyway, you know.
I'm just being objective about everybody it.
Everybody overblew the comparison, to be honest. I mean, yes, Zeppelin was an influence, but they were for a lot of bands like that, and they just kind of did a similar bluesy type style. I would never stop and say they ripped them off to the T like a lot of people used to. Now Greta Van Fleet's a different story.
Well, I like Greta Van Fleet better than Kingdom Come.
But what I'm saying is that is blatant. If you sit down and listen to it, Kingdom Come is just kind of in the same wheelhouse.
Well, what I really like about this Kiss album is like what you guys said, it's different. But that's what I liked about the 90s scene, because those guys were influenced by everybody. Smashing Pumpkins loved Kiss as much as they loved Jesus and the Mary Chain and Black Flag and Led Zeppelin. Pearl Jam. These guys had a wide range of influences, where the 80s band seemed to start at Arrow and then at Smith. You know, I'm exaggerating, but there were so many bands that were into Aerosmith, and they had to have a guitar player that was like Eddie Van Halen. And let's face it, most of those guys in those so-called hair bands were pretty freaking phenomenal musicians, you know, guitarists. But
yeah. Well, yeah. Let's also remind ourselves though that this album was being recorded after the Revenge tour between 93 and 94. So yeah. If they had struck while the iron was hot. The
majority of it was recorded in 95.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, if they had struck while the iron is hot, maybe it would have fared against some of the more popular bands. I will say this, though. If Kiss had, you know, tried to tap in to what was going on with the pop punk and emo punk stuff that was going on, that would have been horrible.
No, that would have been
I'm just being honest. And I love the band Jimmy World. I think they get a bad rap.
I just envisioned Gene singing All the Small Things, and
with the refrain going,
that would be, thank God it never happened.
With the repeat chorus being, not me, I'm not small. Anyway.
I don't know. I can't imagine. I think even they have their limits how much of a trend they'll chase, I hope, you know.
I think they do to an extent, and that's one thing that really irritates me about some things they'll say retrospectively at points, like Gene, I'd be embarrassed to play Unmasked for my mother. Yeah, whatever. You say that about different albums all the time because of the trend. You just own it, move on.
That's it. All right, what's the next album?
Paul Stanley's second solo album, Animalize. Well, I mean, you know, really, and even though, yes, I like one of the Gene songs on here and am at least entertained by the rest, he literally crapped out four demos, then went to shoot a movie. You know, it kind of leave Paul leaves Paul hanging a lot. And even though they use those songs, you can tell Paul definitely put the feel on it and made it fit in with the rest of the album during the production phase and all that, because yeah, I'm pretty sure he produced this one.
He did.
He did.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, actually, one thing that's kind of funny, Jean Bouvard from the Plasmatics plays on three tunes on this. And I know he wrote Thrills in the Night with mm-hmm. Paul, but I have to bring up my notes here.
Phenomenal bass player, by the way.
Oh, he totally is. And what I was going to say was nothing against him. I just thought it was funny because Paul was doing some retrospective interviews and, you know, brought up how out of touch Gene was at this point in time, and even had was it quotes from Ron Nevison in there talking about Crazy Nights and how, yeah, Gene was there, but he spent most of the time in the back of the studio reading Variety. So Paul says what he has to say about this album, and all of a sudden Gene secures some interview with Jean for him to say, well, Gene was there the whole time I was there. Bullshit. If Gene was there, why were you recording this extra bass on these other songs?
But it makes sense because Jean's talent is completely different from Gene's. You know, Gene does great walking bass lines. Jean, full on rhythmic beast. Sorry, Greg, continue.
It's okay. I was going to say that actually came about on Under the Gun and... what was the other song? Get All You Can Take, because originally Mark St. John, who, by the way, part of the reason this album ranks so low for me, although I do like, well, Kiss, when they get lost in being metal Kiss, it doesn't always end up the best, but cranking up the tempo and adding some speed and a little bit of heaviness here, even though they were riffing on, you know, like Doc and a Motley Crue and the like, I really think it works well for them here for the most part. But Mark St. John, though immensely talented, does not fit in with Kiss. And that's all there is to that. But anyway, they wanted him to play the bass on those tunes. And he fought him every step of the way. Absolutely not. I'm not playing it like that. And then they would try to talk to him about the way he was playing certain songs. Even Eric Carr tried to talk to him about it. You know, Paul calls it puking notes. I guess you can say that about almost any shredder, really. But when you sit and really listen to this album, he does pull that bullshit quite often where he just goes off on a tangent and it doesn't really fit the rest of the song. The most noticeable one is probably in Thrills in the Night on the bridges. I mean, he comes in with that, and that shit's cool, but he just goes off on a tangent like a Vinnie Vincent live solo during the Lick It Up tour. And okay. It's unfortunate because he was talented, and I mean, I guess it kind of sounds wrong to say, ooh, he should have conformed, but not that he had to change his style, but he really needed to listen and hear what would be good with the song and what didn't work.
Because yeah, but Paul Stanley's a producer. So it would have been his job.
That, yeah. But I mean, you hire on this guitar player, you're not going to go through and completely re-record everything.
No, but you hired the guitar player to do it specifically to sound like that, you know? I mean, they could have hired somebody else, but they chose him because of the way he played, the speed. He fit in with that shredding, you know, that shredding era at the time. Mark St. John is probably the most talented, unknown, famous person ever. I mean, here he was in his famous. It's like, it's not quite like the Tommy Bolin era of Deep Purple, because Tommy Bolin has a huge following in death, where Mark St. John is known by us. We're fans of Kiss. There's no...
Well, you know, the White Tiger album was good, but yeah.
It was okay, but yeah, but not a lot of people, you know.
We have to take one thing into account. When Mark joined Kiss, he was 24. Hmm. 10 years younger than Gene, Eric, and Paul. Having been...
I think Mark got the offer. Mark saw a big name. And as a matter of fact, he admitted this too before he passed in an interview. Mark got in the band. Mark got to the sessions and started writing it with him. And all of a sudden, Mark discovered he really didn't want to be in Kiss. And yeah. I think being so young, that was a very hard thing for him to deal with. And I don't think he knew how to express it, which is the unfortunate part.
And having been a 24-year-old guitar player, I've found myself in that position where sometimes you're dealing with people that you really don't want to deal with, but you're kind of that guy that's afraid to rock the boat. So although, you know, you'll stay silent when it comes to that, then you do what he does on the album and quote unquote puke notes, because that's how you play. You know, at that point, 24 years old, you're still playing to say, oh yeah, I'm good, as opposed to playing what's right for the song. You know, this was the one of the few occasions where hiring a fusion guitar player to be in a hard rock band does not work, as opposed to the one time where it did work, which was Chris Poland in Megadeth.
Why did they pick Mark St. John? Like, was there nobody else? Like, where did he even come from?
That's a good question.
Complete unknown. He auditioned.
Complete unknown.
Yeah, and he was recommended, I believe, by Mike Varney, who used to run a column in Guitar for the Practicing Musician.
He's also the owner of Shrapnel.
Yeah, he discovered, I believe, Yngwie, and discovered
Paul Gilbert,
Tony Occupine, and Jason Becker. But I believe that recommendation came from him, even though, as far as I know, he never signed them to Shrapnel. He never put out I don't know if you guys remember, but Shrapnel in the 80s at that time would put out nothing but shredding albums, all instrumental.
Yeah.
I think Steeler was the only exception to that, and Keel. But
don't forget Racer X.
Yeah, but Racer X fits the mode for one reason, because it's all, you know, crazy guitar playing. Excellent stuff, but yeah, they had singing in it. But yeah, I guess Racer X, but well,
that was a close knit tight unit.
Grover Jackson introduced him to Paul Stanley.
So it was Grover Jackson?
Yep. Yeah.
That makes sense, because Jackson guitars, Kiss were using them at that point, so is Mark St. John. In fact, he used a single coil three pickup Jackson, which is not easy to come by unless you get it custom made. But but the thing is, you know, that California scene at the time with Shrapnel and with Guitar World and with Musicians Institute and you know, but the Musicians Institute, like all that, it's all interconnected. So it makes sense that they got him from there.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
And I did go back into my notes and read Manny. Yes, Paul Stanley did go through and Dr. Mark solos throughout.
Yeah.
And I think Bruce ended up doing two of the songs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Bruce did.
So one thing, we've talked about everything, but what are your thoughts on the album, Greg?
Yeah, sorry, Greg, go ahead.
Yeah, we've talked about everything, the history of the album and production, but, you know.
It's not their best, but I do like it a lot. I mean, when they're on, they're really on. I've Had Enough, Into the Fire is a great song. Under the Gun, Thrills in the Night. Heaven's on Fire, as goofy as it might be, is a great, catchy tune. I really, for whatever reason, love Lonely as the Hunter, which it doesn't sound like Gene put in a lot of effort into.
You don't say
that. Yeah, but I like it too. But you can tell it's just like you said, he just shit it out.
Yep. Mark has a great solo in that too. Actually, I think it's Mark. I don't think
I'm pretty sure that's
the ones Bruce did. Yeah,
I think that was one of the ones Bruce did. That and Murder in High Heels.
That is Bruce, yeah.
Murder in High Heels, it's not St. John?
Nope.
Oh, okay. Oh, I was thinking of While the City Sleeps, because it ends with While the City Sleeps and Murder in High Heels.
I actually like that whole album, but we'll get to it in a minute. I want to hear the rest of your thoughts.
Well, Ringo's first.
Really, the only songs I can say I don't like it all. Burn, bitch, burn, and get all you can take.
It's so terrible.
Oh, come on. So you're bad. Not, I want to put my log in your fireplace. Come on. What? That's poetry.
Yeah, that's what I tell when I'm at a bar. That's what I tell girls. And
that's how you pick up all your chicks, huh?
All of them, man. Just yeah. I just quote Kiss songs, and they're like,
A lyric like that will get you a chicken McNugget anyway. Sorry,
but yeah, other than two songs, I really like every song on here for the most
part. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Although some of it does drag a little bit, but you know, with the majority of these albums, especially in the 80s, there was always filler tunes. It's just sometimes the filler is good and it's playable, and sometimes it's crap. For
the man, the album's only here, like 34 minutes long.
Yeah, it's not a long album. Yeah, at all.
No, it's Murder in High Heels and Burn, Bitch, Burn. That drag for me. They're just, oh, and get All You Can Take. Jesus, that is. I'm sorry. I know it's Kiss, but good luck.
I do like that song, but I know why you cringe, because it's ridiculous.
It's absurd. I mean, it isn't Poison level bad, but
Poison have never written a song that bad.
All around, you gotta get on. You really, the fucking chorus is what fucking difference does it make? Like that. This is where we're at in 1984. In
so Poison. Edgy.
It was edgy in 84, man.
I mean, to me, it sounded like a bad take on a Led Zeppelin type riff. I mean, you know.
Oh, don't insult Led Zeppelin.
Like no, that. I'm not insulting Led Zeppelin. I'm saying it was a bad attempt at trying to do a Zeppelin-like riff. A better example of them actually succeeding at it would have been Keep Me Coming off Creatures. This was the opposite.
Yep, exactly.
I only like four songs off of this album. I've Had Enough, Into the Fire, Heaven's on Fire, Thrills of the Night, and While the City Sleeps. The rest of this album just kind of, it's pretty much as you described it. It's just kind of like thrown together. You know, the Gene songs just kind of just go nowhere, you know, and just, it is what it is. Yeah, I just at least listened to Kiss
album. I know why Monster. You don't like Under the Gun.
Why?
Double Bass Kiss.
Double Bass Kiss, yes. I'm not a huge fan of Double Bass Kiss songs.
Interesting. I know you're not, but I thought you might have liked this one because Eric does great on it.
He does, but it's
his best double bass work, to be honest.
It is. And it's heavy too. This is a really heavy album at this time for them, you know?
Yeah.
I think this is really the first. It's even heavier than Creatures, because Creatures is pretty heavy, but this is like even heavier. This brings a bit more. You don't think so? This sounds more metal than Creatures.
I don't think so. Obviously, you've been drinking, Wayne.
No, because there's no double bass stuff in Creatures. There isn't here. I mean, there's a few little things.
More, this is more in the speed metal
right
type of wheelhouse, if you will. But Shrapnel. In terms of intensity and dynamics, it is not heavier than Creatures.
Well, Michael James Jackson is a better producer than Paul fucking Stanley, too.
That's true.
Sound-wise, it's
that's a true.
Yeah.
But I understand what you mean.
Right, yes.
I would have given you double points if you had said Stanley Burt Eisen, not Paul fucking Stanley. But don't worry about that.
But yeah, this is my least one of my least favorite, least listened to Kiss albums. So I'm surprised you have this up so high on your list, because this would be down towards the bottom for me.
To be honest, a big reason, even though I complained about how he doesn't fit in all the time, but Mark St. John's guitar playing, he was, well, like Vinnie Vincent, he was almost overqualified to be right. in Kiss, really.
Yeah.
It, unfortunately, his style is just so far and away, it doesn't always quite work with them. But for considering Crazy Nights as the pop metal album and then Asylum as the glam metal album, this is Kiss doing 80s metal right. And
Well, before Luke gives his thoughts, I'll give my thoughts. When I first bought the album, I was 13 or 14, and I really loved the album. Matter of fact, the first time I saw Kiss was on this tour. And I loved the album. As I've grown older, take away the nostalgia factor, I still think it's a good album, but it's a good album of its time period. I certainly couldn't give this album to, say, one of my kids. They don't like Kiss anyway, but, you know, to introduce them to Kiss, this would not work for them. You know, it is so of its time period. Even the back cover, you know, with their outfits and the type of photography, it definitely is of its time. I used to listen to that album a lot, and I think you're right. It marks St. John. Well, honestly, I didn't rate him very highly as a kid. And think when this album came out, what, not 83 or 84, right?
84.
So it was big. Motley Crue, Dokken, Twisted Sister. There was no formula then. There was no pop metal formula then. You know, the point, you know, Motley Crue hadn't written Home Sweet Home yet. Poison didn't exist yet, at least not to the general public. Wasp was getting
some attention. Didn't exist at all.
Well, my point is that it wasn't as formulaic as it would be, where, you know, Twisted Sister would help turn it that way. You've got to have the anthem, and then you've got to have your rock song, and then you've got to have your ballad. And in 84, it was beginning to creep up. It didn't yet exist, you know. And then on this case of this album is also the outside songwriters are used to help make the songs a little more radio friendly, but doesn't go over the top like they would with Crazy Nights or even Asylum, you know, in my opinion.
I don't think this album's radio friendly at all, except for Heavens on Fire.
I think that's the only single that was.
It is.
No.
No, Thrills in the Night.
I'm wrong. Thrills in the Night was a single, right?
Oh, guys? Really? I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They released a video for it, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I remember because it only showed it a couple times. But the album was a huge seller and it did its job. I just don't think it holds up that well anymore. No. Nostalgically, for me, I like it a lot. But if I were to take that out of it, equation, I hate to agree with Wayne. It'd probably be near the bottom. You know, take out my personal bias toward it, probably be near the bottom, you know.
Yeah, you like being near the bottom. Lou?
Mm-hmm. Well, it depends on who I'm with. Anyway, go ahead, Lou.
Zingo. See, Animalize. Yeah, I have this at number 13 as well. So here is where mediocrity sets in after greatness saved them. The best songs are some of the strongest of their career. The weakest song isn't the worst thing they ever did. And the okay songs are just okay. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Paul Stanley Show. Here is where Paul takes the reign, and while I admit the tour had some of their best and most high-octane performances, I mean, let's face it, I've never seen a band play like they were high on cocaine without ever doing the drug until I saw that Animalize Live Uncensored show.
That's true.
It's a hell of a drug, even if you don't take it. The album itself is not all that great, but I love about 50% of the album and will gladly put these songs in my playlist. But the other ones are just throwaway tracks that make me question, why did they even put them together in the first place? Some may say that Asylum is the sister album to this, but if you took the best songs from Asylum and combined them with the best songs from here, you'd have a perfect 80s Kiss album. So do I hear greatness on this? Yes. Is it one of their best? Not in my opinion. And as a guitar player, I really like Mark St. John. I think he's a very good technical player. He's very fluid, and he's got some interesting stuff that he pulls out. I mean, this was actually my late brother Mike's favorite Kiss album. And he said the reason why was because of Mark St. John. But he was also, you know, really into, like, you know, progressive rock and jazz and fusion and stuff like that. So it would make sense that he would get some satisfaction out of Mark's playing. But, you know, in hindsight, it's like putting Alan Holdsworth in Mike and the Mechanics. It doesn't work. I'm glad you got a kick out of that, Craig. Let me see if I repeat that.
That would be interesting.
Manny, did you hear what I just said about Mark St. John?
Yeah, I don't know if Mike and the Mechanics would
work with Alan Holdsworth.
Yeah, that would actually, I would really be interested in that.
I'd be scared. By the way, who was the opening band on that tour? The Animal Crocus. It was Crocus.
Okay, when I saw him anyway. Yeah.
So to me, the standout tracks are I've Had Enough, Into the Fire, Under the Gun, Thrills in the Night, and While the City Sleeps. Yes, Wayne, I like Under the Gun. Okay tracks, Heaven's on Fire. If I want to laugh, I'll put on Burn, Bitch, Burn. I mean, if I want to laugh. And, you know, I don't think Get All You Could Take is the weakest track. I would have to say Murder and High Heels is.
I'd say, yeah, that'll Burn, Bitch, Burn.
But I could laugh at that one. Murder and High Heels.
I can't even laugh. It's just makes so me stupid. I can't even laugh at that song.
Get All You Can Take is like the Kiss audio equivalent of Porky's 3, The Revenge.
I never saw that one, but I do love the second.
It's pretty bad. But
yeah, you don't need to see Porky's Revenge.
It's just kind of funny how albums age, you know, and I really, like I said, as a kid, I really liked that. Lou and Wayne and Greg, when did you guys come into this album? Just out of curiosity.
I had a cassette. Oh, God. Must have been the early 90s. I think my father found it in like a car or something because he's a tow truck driver. So he used to find things in junk cars all the time. And I would have the cassette. I probably listened to it a couple of times, but it just never really grabbed me.
You next, Greg. When did you first hear it?
I had the cassette single of Heaven's on Fire when I was about 12 or 13 or so, but I didn't get the album for about another year or two when I was actively searching out their back catalog. And this one, I think I actually had a special order from Tower Records. It wasn't that easy to get, even though they had already done the remaster series.
Wow.
But, at the time, because I was super into Shredders and stuff like that, I mean, I loved it the first time I heard it, but once the newness wore off of it, I mean, it was never really like my favorite. I really liked the guitar work on it, but I mean, the stuff that was bland or not that great really stuck out quite obviously quite quickly.
I,
not as bad as Asylum, where I gave it away, but
I saw the video for Heaven's on Fire when I was like 5 years old, because there used to be a UHF channel up here called U68 that showed music videos, and it was really cool. If you were a kid that didn't grow up with MTV, you had this UHF station that broadcast to New York and New Jersey. So it was on there. My brother had the cassette, but I didn't listen to it until about 9 years later, like in 1994, 95. So I was 14 years old when I heard it. And, you know, I didn't listen to the Kiss albums in sequence. It was sort of like I kind of just, you know, saw whichever album cover best interested me. So, you know, we're going to get into Destroyer next. So that was the first one, then Hotter Than Hell. And then, you know, five albums later, I picked Animalize, and then I loved it at the time. But then when I went back into the rabbit hole and discovered other Kiss albums, you know, then I was like, wow, this album really fails in comparison to, like, let's say, a Creatures or a Lick It Up, or I'll even say The Elder. You know, to me, The Elder was a better album, but, you know, at the time when I first heard it, before I heard the rest of the Kiss catalog, I loved it. Now, not as much.
Yeah. All right. What's next?
Destroyer, the album that turned them from a spectacle and a full-fledged superheroes. But I think hidden in all that grandiose melodrama and I'm sure cocaine-influenced bombast that Bob Ezrin bought to Kiss is a little bit of misdirection.
You know, it's a trend, people.
Yeah. I tell you, if Frank Zappa wrote cocaine decisions about anybody, it was definitely Bob Ezrin. And I mean, I'm sorry, Manny. I know you love him a lot. And some of the albums he produced, I absolutely love. And I think he did a great job, like Alice Cooper, Love It to Death, and Killer, and Floyd, and some later Alice stuff. But sometimes when he was really all fucked up there, he made some odd choices.
What was the name of that Frank Zappa album?
The Man from Utopia.
I'm going to look it up.
It's not one of his better albums, truthfully, but a killer album cover.
Yep, and Steve Vai's on it. You can't go wrong with Steve. Well, actually, you can go very wrong with things with Steve Vai on it if you get Whitesnake's Slip of the Tongue, but that's a conversation for another. Actually, no, it's not. You're not getting me to listen to that fucking album.
No, it ends with 87 for me. That's it. Continue, yeah, Greg.
Me too.
And I'll tell you this real quick.
Go ahead.
So I'm in a cover band now called 90 Below. And I mentioned, hey, you know what would be a cool Whitesnake song to cover? Fool for Your Lovin', but the 1980 version, not the 1990 version. So just wanted to say that. Good. Go ahead, Greg. I'm sorry.
So I actually got this as one of the first Kiss records I had had. I already had Dressed to Kill, Creatures of the Night, and Alive. And a friend of my dad's that he worked with said, oh, you got to have Destroyer. It's great. So I get to through the first couple of songs, you know, Detroit Rock City and want to bring up my notes first here. Sorry.
King of the Nighttime World.
Yeah, King of the Nighttime World, which actually re-listening to this as an adult, it's kind of, I'm like, you know, I still like this, but it definitely loses a lot of power going from Detroit Rock City into that tune, but I still love it. And then God of Thunder, which is great. And then we get to Great Expectations and the boys choir and the string section. And it's like, what in the fuck is going on here?
a little bit of everything.
Yeah. And to be honest, even though Ace wrote it and I usually love his songs, Flaming Youth isn't really one of my favorites. It's kind of like Kiss doing a 60s pastiche. And I do like it, but it's kind of just okay, but it's short, so there's that.
That middle part came from a demo called Mad Dog, if I'm correct, right?
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, I like it. It isn't a bad song. I think this was just so far out of what I was expecting from Kiss when I first heard it that I was kind of like, well, what the fuck? But it's definitely one of their most interesting albums. I don't think everything that Bob had them do or introduced to them 100% works on a Kiss level here, which is really the only reason why I have it listed so low, because while interesting, it is a little uneven and does play odd in some spots. However, some of those are really beautiful moments, like Beth, which is just brilliant. I mean, what he helped Peter Criss turn that song into is just utterly amazing. And Flaming Youth is fun. You know, Shout It Out Loud, to be honest, did I love it when I was 10? Of course. What do I think of it now? I'll stick with Rock and Roll All Night. Like, it's fun in concert, but not really a song I go to on the album. But the two I really dislike on here, one is Great Expectations. I think it would have been great if it was done by Alice Cooper or especially Mötley Crüe or a multitude of other 70s bands. I just don't feel like it's in Gene's wheelhouse. Even if they had given it to Paul, hell, even Peter, I think it would have been fine. I just think Gene's too far out of his element to make that work right. And then Do You Love Me? I just don't like. I think it's irritating as hell. It's probably one of the worst heavy Beatles things that they did.
Greg, were you aware of something, though?
What's
there,
that?
Bob Ezrin wanted all four members to sing parts of that song. It wasn't supposed to fall on just Gene.
I was not aware of that, but now some of the abrupt cuts on the different verses make a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wonder if that would have made it a better song. Probably not, but
it would have made it palatable. I mean, it still wouldn't be my favorite Kiss song, but like, what's a good example here from another Ezrin produced album? Oh, I love Give the Kid a Break on Alice Cooper Goes to Hell in the context of the album, but it's not really a song you would pick out of the album to listen to on its own.
Right. I agree with that.
Understood.
Yeah, totally agree with that.
But if all four members of Kiss actually sung Great Expectations, I would feel the same way about it, whereas now I just don't really care for it. But it definitely elevated them to that next level, and it's great in that respect. It's a huge, bombastic record that just really elevated Kiss into the stratosphere. But musically, it's really uneven for me, and I think it ends up a little bit lesser of one of their records. And I know that's sacrilege to some people because of God of Thunder, King of the Nighttime World, and Detroit Rock City, which are great songs in their own right. It's just the album doesn't carry it all the way through for me. So good, but not the best. I'd give it a 6 out of 10, honestly.
Wayne?
Well, maybe a 7.
No, you already gave it a 6.
You can't change it now. You can't change it now. I'm always on a love-hate relationship with Dynasty. I mean, there's the classics, this Detroit Rock City.
Dynasty.
Dynasty, I'm sorry. Dynasty. Destroyer. I'm half awake.
If you Monster, haven't. Right. Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
Detroit Rock City, King of the Nighttime World, God of Thunder, I've hated pretty much ever since I've listened to that song for some reason. But I just never liked it until recently, where I really loved the live version. With them playing the song, it just sounds so much better. They play it faster. It's just sounds better live than it does in this album. But I've grown to like it on this album, whatever. Great Expectations is another song that I always used to hate, and now I like it. I don't know why.
Of course you do, sitting over there with your fucking ghost shirt on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Flaming Youth.
Wait a minute. I like Ghosts, and I can't stand that song either.
It just all of a sudden just grew on me. I don't know why. I have no idea why. Flaming Youth, I can do without. Sweet Pain, get rid of that one too. Shout Out Loud, probably one of my top 5 favorite Kiss songs. Beth is just a great piano what's his name? I can't even think right now. You know who I'm talking about. Great, just a great thing that they did because it's just piano, orchestra, and him him singing. And what? Peter Criss.
Yes.
Yes, Peter Criss.
But it's something that they didn't do before. So it's really cool to hear him just singing like that. And I really like Do You Love Me. I don't know why you don't like that song. It's a really terrible. Good Kiss song. I like it. I think it's Kiss. It sounds like Kiss. And that rock and roll party thing at the end of this album is just stupid. I don't know why they had it.
Yeah, they can get rid of that. That's shit.
It made absolutely no sense.
That was an experiment in sonic excess.
It was stupid.
That's probably Ezrin thing. Yeah, I love the album. I love the album a lot, actually. I don't listen to it as much as I did, but even the cover is iconic. Most of the songs still in the set list. I'm a little sick of Detroit Rock City, but I still love the song. It's kind of interesting. What's the next one? King of the Nighttime World. That actually is a Kim Foley song that had been hanging around forever and I don't know what Paul Stanley and Bob Ezrin did to get songwriting credit for it, but maybe change the lyric or whatever. But they're both given credit along with a guy named Mark Anthony. But Kim Foley would not become famous songwriter. He became famous being a manager to the Runaways.
A Devin's Bengali.
Yeah. God of Thunder is great. And for years, I thought the songwriter was Gene Simmons. I didn't know it was Paul Stanley. I like Great Expectations, and I can see the songwriting credits as Bob Ezrin, but to me, It sounds like an Alice Cooper song thrown away with bad lyrics. You know, mm-hmm. I could see Ezrin doing that with Alice, and Alice probably said, "No, I don't want any more fucking orchestration on my album." Is what I, because by then, what year was it? 76, right?
70.
So he was already working and completed Welcome to My Nightmares. So his mindset was still on here. But I like Great Expectations quite a bit. Flaming Youth, probably the worst song Ace wrote with Kiss. Actually, all four are credited to it. Well, no, it's not. It's Bob Ezrin's credited, along with Ace, Paul, and Gene, which is interesting. So that means the three of them, if they work together, or anymore. Sweet Pain is a pain. That is,
it is a pain.
That is the very definition of, if you want to know where the filler track is, yeah. Sweet Pain is. It's so bad that even at 3 minutes and 20 seconds, you're like, it's awful. It's terrible. I can, even just hearing it in my head, I'm cringing, you know.
It's and again,
the lyrics. What is it? If one Kiss song doesn't make you cringe, then they're not doing their job. Well, congratulations, boys. You've done your job. I love Shout It Out Loud. I love how juvenile it is. I love the, basically a bunch of stupid kids outside throwing out a party and, you know, they're shouting out loud 70s style.
It's the second part of Rock and Roll All Night, basically.
Really, yes. Yeah, it really is. Yeah. And it's amazing. Bob Ezrin gets a lot of freaking songwriting credits on this album. You see that? Oh.
Well, I mean, you know, when they went into the sessions with him, he taught them music theory. He took them to music school.
Yeah, but if you look at those Alice Cooper albums, he doesn't get songwriting. He gets a couple on when he went solo, but he doesn't get many when the band Alice Cooper was around. Right,
but they knew music theory and knew how to write music.
Well, okay, I'll give you that.
He probably helped them arrange it and get it out, but, you know, it's... When you're referring to Kiss, who think very highly of themselves as campers, you know, this is obviously a guy who's putting his foot down and saying, nope, I'm getting credit on the songs. Fuck you.
Yeah, well, my point is he also worked with Lou Reed and it's a great album if you're into Lou Reed Berlin. He doesn't get any songwriting credit. I think he got maybe one, which Reed probably gave him reluctantly. I'd have to look. And, you know, when he did The Wall, he was shocked that Roger Waters gave him songwriting credit for some song on The Wall. I'd have to look it up which one it is, but
I'm shocked too.
Yeah. Well, you know, Waters is pretty stingy with his songwriting credits. By the way, the song Beth, I do like it, but according to Stan Penridge, Paul Stanley, and I think even Bob Ezrin, Peter Criss's songwriting to that song was very minimal. He got his name thrown on there, but according to them, he didn't do much. It's mostly, there's a demo that exists that you can look for it that Stan Penridge did years ago, you know. So.
No, Peter Criss was in that band with Stan Penridge and
Chelsea wrote
the original lyrics to it. It was called Beck.
Well, there and should be more songs about Jeff Beck. I agree.
The other Beck.
Stan's girlfriend was named Rebecca.
So. Well, then how is Peter Criss... I'm going to agree. Name me one decent Peter Criss song besides Beth that he wrote. And the solo album, that's mostly Stan.
I can't
Kenridge
remember the name.
Or
of it
Sean,
now.
Whatever.
He's got a couple good ones I like on Let Me Rock You from 82, though.
Lady Driver?
Fuck
Baby Driver.
Baby Driver. Sorry.
That's a Chris Penridge song.
Yeah,
that's I think he's asking if Chris has ever written a song solo.
Exactly.
I know what he's asking. I just don't know.
Do you?
You know why you don't know, Wayne? Because
I don't give a
exist.
Shit, and I'm not a guy.
Because you're a musical yes, pig.
It doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. Nothing exists.
Doesn't exist. No. I'm just saying that Peter Criss got a lot of money for doing a lot of cocaine and throwing his name in there. Okay, if Wait. I was in the studio, you got one.
I think Dirty Living from Dynasty.
Nope, that's a co-write with Penridge.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah. I just looked it up.
Huh.
Peter
Criss
couldn't. Peter Criss couldn't compose a fart. Anyway, go ahead.
Ouch.
Look, I like Peter Criss as a drummer. I think he gets a lot of shit. I think part of the original Kiss sound was the way he drummed because it was more R&B.
Did he write Tossin' and Turnin'?
Fuck no, he didn't write that.
That's right,
that's an R&B song.
I know.
Yeah.
That one I know. I know that one.
I Can't Stop the Rain, great song, but and he's a good singer. I like.
He is a good singer. He does have a very good voice.
Yeah. Matter of fact, the original Kiss lineup is one of the few, like the Beatles, where everyone was a good singer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Lou, what do you think? Let's get this over with.
Yeah, Lou, what do you think?
Great.
Hold on. It says that even on his solo album, all the songs he wrote were co-written with Stan Penridge.
Yeah,
Holy shit, Chris has never written a song on his own, ever.
You know why? Because he can't write. Why would Paul? I get why Paul Stanley and Peter Criss or Paul Gene, but what? Why would Bob Ezrin give a shit?
He is a drummer.
So well, that's true.
Why would Bob Ezrin give a shit about helping him with the song? You mean?
Yeah. Why would Bob Ezrin
go? Payday
for Peter Criss. Well, Bob Ezrin gave him
because
some songwriting credit on that one too.
Because Bob Ezrin heard the demo and instantly recognized it was going to be the biggest hit off of the album. He even told Peter that quite famously, actually. He said, look, we should do this, and we should do this way, talking about the orchestration and everything, but it's going to be huge, and they're going to hate you for it.
So,
yeah, Bob right Ezrin, he was.
So Bob Ezrin, basically what you're saying is, he took the song, rearranged it, basically rewrote it, told Peter, stand there and sing. I'm going to bring an orchestra and it's going to be a big hit because I'm rearranging it.
Did he at least play the piano?
Yeah.
He didn't play. Yeah, Bob Ezrin played the piano, not Peter fucking
Did he play it live? Did Peter Criss play it live?
No, he sat on a stool and sang to a backup track.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah, I never watched. Maybe I have.
He did that when I saw the farewell tour. He came out.
He's always.
Oh, okay. Yes. All right. Now that I'm pitching it.
And he made the mistake of calling Jones Beach Long Beach.
So then, why did they give Eric Singer the piano to fake play on stage if Peter Criss didn't play the piano either?
Because they've been doing the same fucking thing since 1977. Man, it's Kiss. They got to sell the brand. They got to change the show up once in a while.
All right, Lou, let's get over.
Wait, do you think there's a single person in the audience that really thinks that Eric Singer is playing the piano?
Yes, there was. I've had to mention it
You're
to a few people. And no, not me. I...
Didn't they notice the piano lid was closed? Anyway, go
ahead. Yeah, magic fingers. So this was my first Kiss album. The story is that I was getting my brother Tony into a lot of the bands that I was into at the time. 93, I was, you know, I really wasn't crazy about like some of the bands that were being played on rock radio because I really didn't care for Pearl Jam. I didn't really care for Nirvana. I loved Alice in Chains and Soundgarden, but you know, at the time, there was a band called Tool that had just released Undertow that I was really, really digging on. So I got my brother into that band. And he said, you know what, let me get you into one of the bands, one of the albums that I grew up loving when I was your age. So we went to Nobody Beats the Wiz. which Wayne bought out, which is, you know, what we have behind him. And went over to the K section, and we go to Kiss, and he pulls out the Destroyer album. Destroyer is the first CD that I ever bought with my own money. But I looked at it and I was like, you want me to get this? They look like four. At the time when I was a kid, I used an expletive that you're not allowed to say. But again, I was 13 years old from New York City. Okay. There's no room for political correctness at this time.
So hey, they say it in Detroit Rock City.
What? They don't say that in Detroit Rock City.
Yeah, they do. The movie.
Oh, the movie. Yeah, which came out like 6 years later. Anyways, moving on along. So I said, okay, I'll listen to it. You know, for 3 weeks straight, all I listened to was Detroit Rock City. I had never heard anything like it. I never heard this song before. Again, I was 12 going on 13. So it really made an impression on me. And for about 2 months straight, Destroyer was all I listened to. It was so different from everything else that was on rock radio and everything that was going on in the mainstream. Because I really wasn't into the gangster rap. I wasn't into the grunge. I wasn't into the R&B. I couldn't relate to it. But for some reason, this album hit me as an impressionable youth. Sorry, I meant ute. Anyway, so I ended up falling in love with the album. And it's in my top 10 of favorite Kiss albums. And I'm willing to be objective. It's probably there for the nostalgic purposes. Although I'm willing to admit Great Expectations is the worst song on the album. My favorite being King of the Nighttime World. There's just something about that song where it's like it hit me as a kid. You know, I fell in love with it. I prefer the Alive 2 version of God of Thunder because I like that tempo better. Although when I first heard God of Thunder off Destroyer, I was like, what the hell is this? Because all I pictured in my head was Godzilla destroying Tokyo. You know, like that's the image that it gave me. And I'm not going to lie, Ace Frehley was a big influence on me as a guitar player growing up. Part of the reason why I put a kill switch on my Strat was because I used to love it when he would hit the A chord, then do the toggle switch up and down on his guitar. You know, I thought that was cool. Little did I know that Tom Morello would base his entire career on that move. So screw him. But, well, you know, true. Ace was hugely influential to me as a kid. Although it's kind of sad to note that most of his lead parts, I know on Sweet Pain, yes, I think possibly Flaming Youth, it was done by Dick Wagner.
Yes.
Even the guitar on Beth is done by Dick Wagner.
Hey, guys, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I got to go. I got to get my kids. So.
Yeah. Oh, you saved your hour. Going?
Hurry up because all I got right. A radio show to do.
Okay. So, you know, that was... I still love it. I still love this album.
All right, great. Everybody, thank you very much for watching. Is that it? Are you done?
Yeah.
All right. You sure?
Yes.
I'm done. SeverAngel.com. Go buy the album. New album Skywards coming out on May 3rd. And brand new video dropping February 6th.
That's right. I would say RatsAreview.com, but I haven't updated that yet. So just be on the lookout for that. Freeworld.fm. I will be on there at 10 p.m. every Wednesday night, which I'm going to do right now because it's 9:58 and I should have been already ready. I don't even have songs set. So join me in the chats and I'll try to do requests and all that shit. So thanks for watching, everybody.
Yes.
Next
thanks
time.
For tuning in.
Yes, this was a lot of fun. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Rock and roll party.